The following reading is brought to you by the Illinois Radio Reader. Hello, this is Joan with the Bloomington Normal Pantograph, dated Thursday, October 2nd, 2025. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Doe Identified in 40-Year Mystery. Late Massachusetts Woman Gets Her Name, Family Finds Closure, by Olivia Jacobs. Bloomington. More than 40 years after she was found along U.S. Route 136 in rural McLean County, the woman buried as Jane Doe has been reunited with her name. Authorities on Tuesday identified her as 39-year-old Linda Cecilia Haddad, a Massachusetts woman whose family never gave up hope of finding her. For 43 years, the identity of this individual remained unknown, McLean County Sheriff Matt Lane said during a news conference to announce the findings. She was a daughter, a sister, a friend, an aunt, and today we begin a way to close that chapter with dignity and truth. Officials from the Sheriff's Office, McLean County Coroner's Office, and Moxie Forensic Investigations said Haddad was identified through investigative genetic genealogy, closing a case that had remained unresolved since 1982. This breakthrough is not just about solving a mystery, but about restoring humanity to someone who was lost and giving their family closure that they deserve, Lane said. The mystery begins. About 1:50 p.m., February 2, 1982, a McLean County Sheriff's deputy was dispatched to the area of Route 136, east of Route 150, for a report of a deceased individual. Upon arrival, the deputy met with Leroy Police, Leroy Rescue, and Illinois State Police Trooper and crime scene technician. On scene, the responding officers found Haddad deceased. Additional units responded, as well as the McLean County Coroner's Office. The woman was taken to the former Brokaw Hospital in Normal, now Carl Broman Medical Center, for a postmortem examination. A passerby had found Haddad around 1:35 p.m. that day, hanging near the base of a utility pole, with her feet on the ground and knees bent. The person stopped a passing snowplow, and together, the passerby and the plow driver cut her free from the pole and called for help. Initial findings determined she was around 38 to 40 years old, 5 feet 10 inches tall, with hazel eyes and black hair, and she weighed about 150 pounds. Investigators found no sign of foul play and determined she died by suicide. State police, sheriff's deputies, and officials from the coroner's office followed tips from the public in trying to identify the mystery woman, but by the end of 1982, no new leads or information had led to an answer. Haddad was buried with the name Jane Doe on December 7, 1982, in a rural Bloomington cemetery. Authorities interviewed various people who said they gave Jane Doe a ride, helped her in some way, or dropped her off at locations between Clinton, Bloomington, Hayworth, and Leroy. Some told officers she had appeared agitated or made comments that seemed unusual. For the past 10 years, I worked on this case with them, as the coroner, with all the hits and the leads, and I'm very passionate about this case, McLean County Coroner Kathy Yoder said Tuesday. The case was reopened in 2016 and again in 2021, when someone researching Jane Doe's case and another person with a viable tip contacted Yoder's office, but they ultimately did not lead to her identity. Her DNA was uploaded to the FBI's Combined DNA Index System, or CODIS, and she was added to the National Missing and Unidentified Persons System, or NAMIS, but the case was suspended. Renewed interest. In August 2023, Moxie Forensic Investigations, a nonprofit organization that specializes in using investigative genetic genealogy, contacted the sheriff's office, and the case was reopened once again. Moxie uses genetic technology to identify unknown individuals, whether they are unidentified human remains or unidentified perpetrators of violent crimes. Brian Waters, case lead assistant and investigative genetic genealogist for Moxie, said his team contacted the University of North Texas in January 2024, seeking leftover DNA extracted from Jane Doe's CODIS upload. The sample was shipped to Genealog, a research facility in Atlantic, Georgia, where it was stored until November 2024, awaiting the funds to allow for DNA sequencing. Waters noted Jane Doe was a fundraiser case. Moxie also partnered with Parabon Nanolabs in Reston, Virginia. In February 2025, Moxie Forensic Investigations started genealogical analysis, and by March, they had developed a potential Jane Doe candidate. Investigators identified living genetic relatives and obtained a DNA sample from one. They compared the new sample with a genetic profile for Jane Doe, and their close genetic relationship confirmed her identity. Moxie traced DNA matches back to the 1700s from a Canadian family, from which one person married into a family with Irish roots, Waters said, explaining the lineage that led to Haddad's family. We came across a woman marrying a man of Lebanese descent, and we looked at their children, who were in viable birth year range for Jane Doe. Looking at this family, we saw that there were two daughters born to this couple, he said. One daughter had proof of life after 1982, and the other disappeared from public records prior to 1982, Waters continued. What especially caught our eye was an obituary stating that this daughter was living in New York City in the 1970s. The same place where that key was manufactured that was found on Jane Doe. The investigators were then able to identify matches for several people of Middle Eastern descent and realized that the Mediterranean DNA was actually encompassing the broader area of Lebanon, he said. On August 1st, authorities officially confirmed Jane Doe was Linda C. Haddad, who was born August 27, 1942, in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Haddad's family was notified and provided the following statement, which was read aloud Tuesday by Casey Connolly, case lead and co-founder of Moxie Forensic Investigations. Linda grew up in Cambridge, Massachusetts, with her parents, older sister, and golden retriever, Michael. Her father brought home fish and chips every Friday evening, which her family would often eat together on the banks of the Charles River near their home. Like her mother and sister, Linda had great style and dressed elegantly. She attended the same all-girls prep school as her older sister, where she made many close friends, some of whom are still in contact with her family today. The family spent summers at their cabin in Spencer, Massachusetts, where Linda enjoyed many hours playing with her sister, swimming in the lake, and appreciating the outdoors. Case closed, but questions remain. During the news conference Tuesday, Yoder confirmed Haddad's case is officially closed. The coroner's office will file an amendment for her death certificate, replacing Jane Doe with her proper name. Lane told reporters his office had no immediate plans to implement the technology used to identify Haddad because it has no similar pending cases, but he noted it could be used to confirm identities in the future. Yoder also said Haddad had been McLean County's only unidentified person. Asked how Moxie's technology differs from popular, commercially available genetic testing services, Connolly said the nonprofit is only allowed to use public databases, which hold a small percentage of information compared to the databases seen at Ancestry and 23andMe. Though the mystery of her identity is solved, authorities say they still do not know why Haddad found herself on that rural McLean County road, her life ending thousands of miles away from her family. There was no indication of why she was in this area or any indications that she was having any thoughts of suicide, Connolly said. But what I find extremely important to note is the amount of effort that her father, her mother, and then her sister also went through to try to locate her from the moment that they could not reach her until just a couple of months ago. They reached out to multiple organizations, groups, and friends who practiced law that were friends of Linda's, who helped them draft up papers to send to different organizations. They tried every single day, and even the family members that are living today, they were still looking too, so they never gave up. The next article is entitled, Seeking Minor Leads to Prison, by Caitlin Klepek. Bloomington. A 61-year-old man has been sentenced to 2 years in prison after he pleaded guilty in McLean County to traveling to meet a minor and indecent solicitation of a minor following an Illinois State Police sting operation. Larry M. Miller of Tolono appeared Tuesday before Judge William Yoder for a sentencing hearing, having pleaded guilty in August. Miller was initially charged in January with traveling to meet a minor, a Class 3 felony, two counts of indecent solicitation, one charged as a Class 3 felony and one charged as a Class 4 felony, solicitation to meet a child, a Class 4 felony, and grooming, a Class 4 felony. When he pleaded guilty August 8th to the traveling and solicitation charges, the prosecution dismissed his remaining charges. Yoder sentenced the defendant to 2 years in the Illinois Department of Corrections for traveling to meet a child and 1 year for indecent solicitation of a child, to be served concurrently at 50%. In addition to his prison term, Miller is ordered to complete 6 months of mandatory supervised release. He earned credit for 209 days served, with an additional 95.5 days for self-help and employment while in custody. ISP sting operation. These charges came about following an Illinois State Police sting operation on January 8th, during which an ISP special agent worked in an undercover capacity and posted online advertisements for sexual services on a website. Three postings were made available for women who were 20, 22, and 19 with a phone number. On January 8th and 9th, Miller contacted all three listings, according to prosecutors, at his initial appearance. When the undercover officers acting as the women in the ads told Miller they were all 16, he continued to speak to them. Miller asked whether the girls were undercover cops, but he proceeded to make plans to meet up with them over the course of 2 days, prosecutors said. On January 9th, Miller met with two of the girls at a hotel room in Bloomington around 3 p.m. He agreed to pay them $200 to have sex. Upon his arrest, Miller told police he had intended to meet up with the two girls, who he thought were 16, to engage in sexual acts with them. He told police he had used online advertisements and websites to meet with prostitutes two previous times, according to the probable cause statement. During a recorded phone call from jail to his wife, Miller told her he wasn't thinking. She asked, "How many times were you not thinking?" To which Miller responded that he didn't want to answer the question, a prosecutor said during his initial appearance in January. Sentencing recommendations. Assistant State's Attorney Spencer Chickahisa asked Yoder to sentence Miller to 5 years in prison for traveling to meet a child and 2 years for indecent solicitation of a child, to be served concurrently, plus fines, fees, and court costs. The defendant knows this is not the kind of behavior he should be engaging with, which is even more concerning, Chickahisa said. He noted the sex offender evaluation indicated Miller had escalating illegal sexual behavior and showed Miller deflected responsibility by saying he had a sex addiction. Chickahisa also argued many of the defendant's messages to the undercover officers indicated predatory behavior. In arguing for a lesser sentence, attorney Josh Rinker noted Miller's lack of criminal history and potential for rehabilitation. Rinker submitted several character references letters from Miller's family members as evidence. "This is a person who is stable. This is a person who is hardworking, able to maintain employment, and able to stay out of trouble," Rinker said. While in custody, Miller completed almost a dozen self-improvement courses, Rinker said. He asked Yoder to give Miller a community-based sentence, 180 days in jail with credit for time served, completion of a sex offender evaluation, and registration as a sex offender. In making a statement to the court, Miller said he has apologized privately to his family and he intended to apologize publicly. He also mentioned the many classes he took while in custody. "I plead mercy to the court," Miller said. "I'm asking for a second chance." Yoder found that a term of probation would deprecate the seriousness of this offense and ordered he be sent to the Department of Corrections. Others charged. Miller was charged along with five other men in six separate cases, all accused of contacting the online advertisements set up by ISP. The other five men are Michael A. Morris, 33, of Forest City, David B. Turan, 26, of Bloomington, Khalid M. Farah, 21, of Arlington Heights, Steve Adma, 22, of Galesburg, and Nathan J. Hansen, 46, of Bloomington. Hansen was additionally charged with unlawful possession of a controlled substance, a Class 4 felony. Turan also faced two Class A misdemeanor offenses for child endangerment. Morris was sentenced to 3 years in prison after he pleaded guilty to one count of traveling to meet a minor and one count of indecent solicitation of a child in July. Turan pleaded guilty in July and was sentenced Monday to 2 years in prison for traveling to meet a minor and child endangerment. Farah is expected to be tried before a McLean County jury beginning October 14th. Adma is scheduled for a plea and sentencing hearing November 24th. Hansen was found guilty of traveling to meet a minor and felony drug possession by bench trial on September 23rd. He is scheduled for a sentencing on November 7th. Here's a local story entitled, Woman Accused of 2024 Voter Fraud, by Caitlin Klepek. Bloomington. A Bloomington woman has been released from custody after authorities said she voted in two different states last election. Suniti R. Sood, 55, is charged with three counts of voter fraud, a Class 3 felony. She appeared Tuesday before Judge Amy McFarland, who ordered she be released pending trial. Bloomington police said she was arrested Monday evening after an investigation that began in June when the Bloomington Election Commission reported a suspected case of voter fraud. Investigators obtained Sood's voting records and found she had voted twice in the November 2024 general election, once by mail in Wisconsin and once in person in Bloomington, according to a news release from Bloomington police. Bloomington officers worked with authorities in Sheboygan, Wisconsin, during this investigation, which resulted in a McLean County grand jury indictment filed September 24th. Assistant State's Attorney David Fitt did not file a petition to detain Sood when she appeared in court Tuesday. Both parties stipulated to the reading of probable cause, and she was ordered to be released. Sood's next court appearance is scheduled for October 24th. In a statement provided by the Bloomington Police, the Bloomington Board of Election Commissioners said voter fraud is incredibly rare, as this was the only instance of multi-state participation of out of 37,786 ballots cast. As soon as this case was brought to our attention, the Bloomington Election Commission investigated this claim. After locating the voter's check in information, the state's attorney's office was contacted by the Bloomington Election Commission. Further investigation was conducted with the Bloomington Police Department, along with the election authority of the other jurisdiction this voter cast a ballot in, the commission stated in the release. Anyone with additional information is asked to contact Sergeant Jared Bierbaum at 309-434-2807 or jbierbaum at citybLM.org. And here's a local item entitled Municipal League Board Adds Brady by Drew Zimmerman. Mayor Dan Brady will bring Bloomington's interests to the table with other cities statewide as a member of the Illinois Municipal League's Board of Directors. The organization allows municipalities throughout the state to advocate together for their shared interests, such as legislation that affects local governments. Brady, a former Republican state lawmaker, was elected to the organization's board during its September 10th meeting. He will serve as one of 34 vice presidents for a one-year term. Serving alongside leaders from across our state gives us the chance to share ideas, learn from one another, and work together on the challenges every community faces, Brady said in a news release. Bloomington is a strong, vibrant city, and I am proud to bring our perspective to the table as we advocate for policies that help cities thrive and keep Illinois moving forward. And here's a story entitled, Bloomington Resident, Purdue Student, Up for Collegiate Inventors Competition. Bloomington. Ronith Dasari, a Bloomington resident and Purdue University student, was announced as a finalist for the 2025 Collegiate Inventors Competition. The annual competition has rewarded innovations, discoveries, and research by college and university undergraduate and graduate students and their faculty advisors for 35 years. This year's finalists and inventions range from an infant jaundice treatment to a sustainable drinking water solution, showing a glimpse into the future of American innovation and emerging technological trends, according to a news release. Each year, individuals representing a broad cross-section of technological fields serve as first-round judges, evaluating entries based on originality of the idea, process, level of student initiative, and potential value and usefulness to society. The finalists are set to present their inventions on Thursday, October 16th, to a panel of final round judges composed of National Inventors Hall of Fame inductees and United States Patent and Trademark Office officials, the news release said. Winning teams will receive cash prizes and patent acceleration. Winners will be announced on October 16th. The United States Patent and Trademark Office is proud to be the host and presenting sponsor for the 2025 Collegiate Inventors Competition, a program where the brightest college minds in our country showcase the ideas and inventions that will shape our future, said John Squires, Undersecretary of Commerce for Intellectual Property and Director of USPTO. He continued, "We are pleased to meet the finalists as they gain valuable exposure for their ideas, receive guidance and feedback from world-changing inventors, and see their hard work rewarded. As these young inventors and entrepreneurs strive to patent their inventions and bring them to market, they represent the promise of our nation's intellectual property system and the growth of our innovation economy. Innovation is ageless." Tesari's team also includes Morgan Coglin and advisor Asim Abolizahab. Their invention is an augmented laparoscopic grasper, or ALG, which is an advanced tool for surgeons. A laparoscopy is a minimally invasive surgical technique that results in less pain, faster recovery, and smaller scars, and is now more widely used than open surgery. Graspers are fundamental tools in laparoscopic procedures, but they can have challenges such as ergonomic issues and reduced tactile feedback. The ALG includes a compact force sensor in the tip of the graspers that provide real-time force sensing capabilities, also giving immediate visual feedback on the force applied to tissue. ALG helps surgeons maintain better control and avoid tissue damage, the release explained. The College Inventors Competition is a program of the National Inventors Hall of Fame and is sponsored by the USPTO. It was established in 1990. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for October 2nd. Please stay tuned.